This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Author M. Dressler is often haunted by her characters. They whisper in her ear as she translates their stories onto the page. This is especially true with the character in her latest book. Emma Rose Finnis is a ghost. The Last to See Me is set along a misty, craggy coast in a world much like our own, but in this realm, humans and ghosts roam the earth together. M. Dressler is also Mylène Dressler, a professor in the Department of English and Creative Writing at Guilford College and the director of the Sherwood Anderson Creative Writing Program at Guilford College, and she joins me right now. M. Dressler, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us about this character and how this ghost came to you.
Well, fittingly, for a ghost story that's narrated from the perspective of the ghost, which makes it a bit unusual, she manifested, basically. She appeared to me. My husband and I were traveling in far northern California a few years ago, and it's beautiful up there. It was near Mendocino, which is actually the fictionalized setting of this book. And it's so fantastically gorgeous there. And as with all of my books, this is my fourth novel, with all of my books, there's usually a flash. There's an illumination, there's an inspiration, a kind of frisson that passes through my body. And I suddenly turned to my husband and I said, what if someone lived here and died here and still didn't want to leave? And I had no sooner gotten those words out of my mouth than Emma Rose Finnis, I didn't have her name at that point, but she began to appear in front of me. I could see her very clearly, and I could also hear her voice, and I could hear what ended up being the last line of the novel. So then it just became a question of letting her haunt me and paying attention to her and following her journey all the way to that last phrase.
How long did she stay with you?
She stayed with me for 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. It took a long... I had never written a ghost story before, and I'd actually never had a character appear to me in that way before. Quite often when I begin a book, I'll just have an idea or I might hear a voice, and I actually have to write to discover the character. So it was very unusual for me. I thought it would be easier. I mean, she just appeared and I heard her voice. But in fact, because I had never written a ghost story before and because she was such an unusual character, it took me quite a while, quite a lot of painstaking listening to understand her story and to understand the bigger questions that were embedded within her story.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because her story becomes entwined with others, so tell us more about the plot, then, of this book.
Yeah, so in this world, as you suggested earlier, ghosts and the living coexist. The world looks a great deal like ours in The Last to See Me. It's actually set in the present, or maybe just a few years hence, but in this particular world, since about the year 2000, it has become possible to see ghosts, to identify them, and to eradicate them so that they won't bother us anymore, to clean them out of our houses. And the people who do this work are called cleaners. They are the ghost hunters. And ghosts in this world, unfortunately, are seen as dirty, are seen as detritus and must be swept away. So the basic structure of the novel is a test of wills, a contest of wills, really, between Emma Rose Finnis, who's been haunting the same house for over 100 years and refuses to go gently into that good night. She refuses to give up the ghost, as it were, and her struggle with the cleaner who comes to remove her from that place.
And tell us more about how she's found out, because they weren't necessarily looking for her.
No,
another family finds her first.
Yeah, in this world, she's quite clever, you know, and in this world she's also figured out that the way that you can remain safely in the world is by concealing yourself, and particularly by suppressing your emotion. But what happens at the beginning of the novel is the Lambry Mansion, the home she's been haunting, has come up for sale. And a wealthy couple comes in to examine the premises, and unfortunately their behavior in the house is quite egregious, quite offensive to Emma, and so she releases her emotion. She lets her anger show. She allows herself to be seen. She makes her presence and her power known in the house. And this couple, interestingly, is not deterred. In fact, they become even more determined, which is an interesting plot twist, really. Rather than being scared away, they become more determined to clean this house out, and that's how Philip Pratt, the cleaner, is invited into the space to do his
work. So when we see the movie, we're not all going to yell, get out the house!
Well, you might want to. But,
okay, but they're determined to stay.
Maybe
I could ask you
to read. She does her best, but they are determined. It's a struggle, really. Yeah.
Could I get you to read maybe from the beginning of the book?
I would love to. Thank you so much for asking. Yeah, so the entire novel is told from Emma's perspective. She's in every scene, whether visible or invisible, and these are the first thoughts that we hear from Emma in her voice. He's come to clean me out. It's as simple as that. He's come to scrape me clean, like a strand of meat clinging to a mussel's shell. He wants to put me down in Evergreen, in that tangled graveyard set aside for lost souls, this hunter. He hopes to put me down there with the poorest of the poor, the forgotten, the graves no one tends to, their crooked stones leaning aft, as if taken aback by how far injustice can go, even after death. In that cemetery hard by St. Clement's Church, the animals pile insult on injury. They burrow down toward the collapsing coffins, our boxes softened underground, and bring up bits of bone and tats of lace. And the dead can do nothing about it, their hands and feet tied, as it were. But what ghost has ever asked to be gnawed and stripped? Who wants to lie down in a cold bed she didn't choose or make? Who wants their bones rolled into a hole, like dice weighted to land on only one number and always the worst? Now, let's say you want to change the odds. Let's say you refuse to be put down in a pauper's grave. What do? You fight.
M. Dressler reading from her latest novel, The Last to See Me. M. Dressler is also Mylène Dressler, who is a professor in the Department of English and Creative Writing at Guildford College and the director of the Sherwood Anderson Creative Writing Program at Guildford. Emma is also an Irish immigrant.
She is,
and
yes.
You're an immigrant, of course.
I am. It's interesting. Immigrants appear in most of my books. And when Emma first appeared to me 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I sensed almost immediately that she was an immigrant and also that she was working class. I could see her face, very sharp, strong face, strong neck, shoulders, strong hands. It seemed to me that she was a young working woman, but I could also see her dark hair, and something about her suggested the immigrant or the child of immigrants. And she is indeed the child of Irish immigrants. She describes herself as Irish-born, Irish-stubborn, raised to be staunch in the face of wounds.
And this is not just any house for her. This mm-hmm. is the house where the man she loved.
Yeah, it's grew a love.
Up.
Yeah, it's a love story as well. Emma is a hard working young woman, raised in a logging camp in the early 1900s in far northern California. Very rugged, very rough and ready environment, and she has a difficult childhood. Her mother dies in childbirth. Her father dies while she's still young, and so she has to support herself by working in the boarding houses that support the lumberjacks. But she has ambition and she has vision for her life. And when the son, the scion of the lumber family, the logging barons of this community who run the town, fall in love with her, when he falls in love with her, she sees that as a great possibility. But unfortunately, the family does not approve of this liaison, and that sets in motion a lot of the action of the novel.
And therein lies one of the themes, too, or at least begins one of the themes, this question of invisibility, what
yes.
we do when we're not the right class or when we have to sort of disguise ourselves from society at large.
Yeah, one of the wonderful things about a ghost story or about ghosts themselves is they can be such metaphors, can't they? They can be such vehicles, such vessels. And of course, you're also asking large questions about life and death and the way we move through the world when you write a ghost story. So when I was writing this book, it became very clear to me that one of the deeper themes in it was this whole question of visibility versus invisibility, and who gets to be seen in culture, who gets to stand in the light, and who is shunted into the shadows, who can claim right their presence and be seen, and who is forced into the darkness. So a lot of really fairly profound conversations and impulses around class and around gender were explored in this book, and I was happy to do that because those seemed to me to be important questions.
Can I ask you to read again?
Yes, I would love to. Let's see. So I'm going to read now. We've just heard Emma's voice. I thought you might like to hear a little bit of Philip Pratt, the cleaner's voice as well, because what's in contest in this world is not just hunter and hunted, but different worldviews, different visions of what it means to be a living or dead, what it means to be human or not. And in this scene, Philip Pratt is explaining to someone how he became a cleaner. Whether or not he chose it or whether it was something that he felt he was born to do. And he says he felt he was born to do it, and then in answering this question in depth, we see more of his worldview in contrast to Ellen's. "Do you remember," he says, "when you were small, being afraid of things hiding under your bed? Even though no one ever suggested to you that you should be afraid of such things, and yet you were. Somehow you knew, without anyone telling you, that the space under your bed wasn't empty, What you knew, what you guessed, was that the empty space alone was enough to make a thing possible. In some way, without ever talking to a scientist about it or to a cleaner like me, you knew in your child's heart that space is never empty. That space is, in fact, the most creative thing in creation because it can be filled by anything. But now you've grown up, and that sensitivity to space is gone from you, as it is from most of us. It disappears when you get older. You lose your feeling for it. But I can tell you the reason you felt something was hiding under your bed all those years ago is precisely because it was. It just knew better than to show itself to you. You see, children frighten so easily, and then they scream and give the ghost away. From the beginning, as a child, I never screamed. I peeked and tried to draw it out. Something has always told me that the easiest way to get rid of a thing that scares you is to bring it close. Then once you see what it is, you can figure out how to crush it. But you have to bring it into close range first. When I did, when I was very young, I saw that a ghost wasn't a real thing. It wasn't a human being. It was a shell, the mold of something that once held a human being. But a mold that can only hold so much, bear so much before it breaks. And all my life, I've wanted to smash what is unbearable.
M. Dressler reading from her latest novel, The Last to See Me. Mylène Dressler is a professor in the Department of English and Creative Writing at Guilford College. So what you do here as well, it seems to me, is, you know, whenever we talk about the natural and supernatural worlds coming together, we think we're in some sort of gothic space or supernatural space, but really we're living with the natural and supernatural function. Think about what memory is. Mm-hmm. If that isn't the weirdest thing on earth,
exactly,
to be standing here with you remembering my mother and mm-hmm. remembering the ghost under my mm-hmm. bed or the monster, mm-hmm. that's pretty creaky and pretty mm-hmm. creepy. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that that's one of the themes here, is that which we want to annihilate because it scares us.
Because it upsets us. We want to get rid of what makes us uncomfortable. And I think one of my favorite lines in the novel is when Emma says, "What is a ghost except a voice inside your head that you should pay attention to but don't?" And so it's not just the function of memory, all right, but the function of willing yourself to hear and see things that we don't want to hear, that we don't want to see, that make us uncomfortable. And that's a really rich vein to mine as a writer. So again, the ghost narrative just lets you do all kinds of fascinating things.
And having a character who would go to the extent, the cleaner here, mm-hmm. that goes to the extent of finding it, which is the thing most of us don't even bother with. It's like, I don't even want to know that thing.
Yeah.
But now we're going to actually look under the bed and then smash it instead of take advantage of what it's got.
And he thinks it's a really noble thing that he's doing. You know, I don't like books where things are too easy or too black and white. And Emma is by no means perfect in her own way of moving through the world. And Pratt is no unalleviated villain. You know, he believes he's doing good. He believes he's performing a service for you, the living, by smashing what is unbearable for you to handle. Meanwhile, Emma wants to assert her dignity and her right to be as a human being.
I'm wondering if these are themes that were interesting to you before, or sort of in what way and what was the order that the themes came together with a character that appeared to you in a burst?
That's a hard question to answer. Talking about memory, sometimes it's hard to remember when you spend 4 years writing a book how it actually all unfolded. But I think the most honest answer I can give you to that question is I listened to her voice, I began writing, and then as I realized her incredible will, her will to survive, that she's a resistor, you know, and that she's on a quest for justice, really, which is, if you think about it, what most ghosts are after. There's usually a wrong that they want to right. They want redress. They want restitution. And once I realized that about her, if you start thinking about justice and restitution, then all kinds of interesting things flow from that. So I remember it happening pretty organically, not that I sat down beforehand and said, oh, look, ghosts are wonderful metaphors. I think I'll use them for these things. But that I just, again, listen to her and listen to her will. And then that guided me toward these larger questions and concerns.
As you were developing the book and developing the characters, were you finding yourself having to plumb those depths for yourself and kind of really confront the things you didn't want to?
I did. I had to do that, and I also had to look deeply into my fears, which was scary, because if you want to write a rippingly good ghost story, and I wanted to do that too, you know, I wanted to explore all of these questions that seemed to me to be big and important, but I also wanted to write a classic ghost story, a really rippingly good page turner, right, that as I did that, I had to think about my own fears. I should say that I don't think this book it's not a horror book, you know, it's not a thriller, it's not a slasher, it's fears are very suggestive, but even to do that, you have to delve into your own. And that was difficult, thinking about the things that terrify me and then finding ways to include them in the book.
Wonderful stuff. Great to talk with you. M. Dressler's latest book, The Last to See Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you all.
Mylène Dressler is a professor in the Department of English and Creative Writing at Guilford College, also the director of the Sherwood Anderson Creative Writing Program at Guilford. And you can find out more about her book at our website, stateofthings.org, a program that's produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Orman, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley's our technical director with help from Al Wadarski today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio, and once again, the music of Greensboro-based artist Bo James.
Pulling on these cowboy boots, the faded black and the heels are wearing away. Is there the final piece of my facade to help me hide my human heart away from what people might say? Those words you say to a troubled man, you never know how they're affecting him, and it might just send that man to despair. But that's why I wear these two cowboy boots, broken in with age, to help me step upon any stage, 'cause they've got a thicker skin than I. His judgment's got itself a wicked side, but poisonous words that just can't bite through these cowboy boots I wear on my two feet. That's why these cowboy boots go everywhere with me. Walking down this dusty road, places I've been and places I wanna go. Wear these boots every step of the way, they ruin my shins with their still protecting me from what they say. Like the boy's got his hand caught in a trap, he touches a bottle, he don't look back, he's gonna end up drinking his talent away. But that's why I